I really think it's now half past nine. We've worked very hard on this document. It's been on the agenda. It's been well known. I mean, it's needed. We should work from 9 o'clock tonight, if possible. And now we're all sitting around like pigeons on the roof of Cape Town, waiting for you to arrive at half past nine and for the people to review.
And I'm sure you may have been aware of this here long before you. Were you here at quarter past six? No.
We were here before nine, madam.
Exactly. The only reason is because we can't afford to have a technical glitch, which I'm sure you appreciate.
Of course.
Right. I think you raised that with me in the past. And I have now taken personal interest in these matters of technology. I think that has to get messy. Now, I do agree. In fact, I was saying only the other day to the Honourable Hill Lewis, who in fact could not believe what I said. That I personally have been taken to trial publicly. Is that not what I told you? Andy. And I was certainly not in the business of urging anyone. Right. And I mentioned that incident of the committee starting late when we were in Marshall. Do you remember? Well, I guess there have been a couple of occasions, but I remember urging me too well, which is why we have tried to start on time and finish early or on time. And that is, I may say this, with the greatest respect for McIntosh, thanks to your support. Thank you. Right. Now, what we will do, I don't want anyone else leaving, so I'm looking around for staff, of course, who can make themselves scarce in a critical moment. Do we have that more system? Because we do need her to make just a wee call, and if you can, Margaret. And just trying to get hold of his Kovati is sort of arriving, as it were, while we all do it in time back. We can decide. We could all be in that position at any point in time. Right. Having said that, I'm amazed, but of course I'm not so amazed knowing that you've been on the subcommittee. So that you are familiar with the document. I wasn't as familiar last time. And I'm going to say the Honourable Elvis is possibly not even the Honourable James or Honourable Mabasa or yourself, Honourable Hadere, or indeed Honourable Vandermeer, and the Honourable Vandermeer were there seriously studying it. But back to the agenda, I did have a quick word with Honourable Kovati, who's on his way back, but then I just wanted to find out exactly where, to ascertain if there was anything else he wanted to raise here on the agenda. It seems that he would like to make this presentation as he arrives, and is asking us whether or not it may be not possible to look at the minister, Paul Minister,
No, unfortunately, I have my senior all the time, and that includes the AAP. As you have, as you all well know, because we have had recent claims from all parties, and that has changed the composition of that subcommittee. And, you know, lest we put our foot wrong, let alone a toe, I am anxious to see this proceeding on course. But we are going to take time. We've got to do some minutes. That goes without saying, because they are crucial minutes. And I need to look at these rulings and so on very quickly. So I go back now on record and ask you if we can formally put forward those minutes earlier. But no means of. Right. Okay. So we are going into then the consideration of the minutes, Mr. Herman. For the benefit of the whole committee, I've asked for a full transcript of that meeting. I'm sure you see that, do you not, in front of you? It is the rare occasion do we do this.
Madam Chair, just on one point of the minute, I noted it's been present. Unfortunately, I did send through an apology. I was not at the meeting, which I'm sorry I missed because it sounded like a lot of sport. I was not present at the meeting, so I can't unfortunately make any contribution. Thank you.
Now, I think Mr. Herman said that, you know, we really, I know you're under a lot of pressure and members will concede, but these are legal documents, and we cannot let people say, where is the signature here? Yes, and the cost, I mean, you can lie, but you would never have put cost. So, can we simply accept that? Everyone is there. I need to distribute this, and I need to put forward to you 3 points, which have arisen out of these minutes. So, most of you are highly familiar with the contents of this meeting. I'm looking at the members' notes here. But, yes, indeed I was. Honourable Mabasa was, Mabasa, Honourable Mabasa, were you here? Honourable Indica Lahn is, yes, but I mean, he's not quite a member of the senior. You know, he's a visiting guest, he's been in trade and industry all his life, he can't get this. Honourable Kadebe, you were there, I'm sure. Honourable Salam, Honourable Vandermeerla, yes, he was. Harris, well, look, Harris again is becoming an honourable guest in the committee, as it were. He was there, I happen to know, at some point in time. Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable James, Dr. James, you were there. Yes. Honourable Mania was also there for the first time in our committee. Honourable McIntosh, you've just indicated your absence. Honourable Ariane Yandersini was there, if I recall. And Honourable Elvis, I'm not sure about you.
I wonder.
Okay. Well, now we have everyone acknowledged. Zoltan, well, of course, he must have been there in their own background. Oh, yeah, I'm sure everyone there may have felt correctly. And we move to page 2. You know, if there are spelling errors, communicate that. If there are spelling errors, let's not waste our time on that. Let's look at substantive issues. Honourable James.
Thank you. You're asking for substantive issues. All I wanted to point out is that the English word for a perfectly reversible word is a palindrome. It doesn't apply to my name, though, because on page 2, I'm referred to as Dr. J. Walmart. And I'm quite happy with it.
1.3. Well, you want to see what I've been referred to.
So the only time I object.
That in public.
The only time I object is when Americans come up to me and say, hello, Jim.
Number 4. update on the same document months ahead. Nips, is it? Well, I was saying to someone off the record, there's a nip and a dip, and it reminded me of, what's that, Teletubbies or something, but a nurse very serious, and that's a 4.1. Mr. M. Zimera, 4.2 report, and then we have the 16.55 billion, 21,393 jobs, page 34. Well, we are moving now, the plane is moving. And the top of page 4, bullet 1, current supplier, bullet 2, the state capital expenditure. Bullet 3, NIP as a policy tool. Bullet 4, the objectives. 4.3. Those are people who defaulted on their offset commitment. Bullet 2, the investment of fairer style. Bullet 3, the monitoring of the offset. Bullet 4, the country against which NIP was benchmarked. Bullet 5, the utilization of multiplier. Bullet 5, 6, the absence of the actual figure. Bullet 8, the actual amount invested by Ferrisol. Bullet 9, the offset investment by Ferrisol. Right consideration of minutes. 5.1.
Honorable Professor, we
Honourable Clavato, we understand everything that's sorted out on the third floor front now, to some degree. Thank you very much. Thank you. And we do appreciate you putting duty first for a short while at the end of the day. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. But all the committee members fully understood. Thank you. But we're just finishing off where we were. The Hansard was a support process there for all members to help them, you know, in this. We have this adopted now, and it enables us to proceed. And what we do is I just say to you that there was a meaning for me to return. Does every member remember that? With a ruling here. I hope so. Now, in the light of the Hansard now being available to all of us, you know, this was important for us, I think. We all looked at the advocate's advice, and she will quickly talk us through that. Thank you. And this is of the advice that you communicate to us in writing an opinion that we talked regarding the document, the three-page document. Yes, we have got this, and we have had this read to us, but if you would highlight the pertinent points.
Provision confidential, attorney work product, attorney time communication confidential, EU personal data. The request was whether this is a document that this committee may use. The main problem with this document is the fact that it purports to be a confidential document. There are certain rules provided by the National Assembly Rulebook regarding confidential documents. The process is usually that a confidential document will be interviewed and the committee will decide whether the document should be treated as confidential or not. In that regard, although the National Assembly Rulebook does not provide some guidelines, we have a court case where our constitutional court has considered whether a document that was submitted to it, and as you will know, that all documents that become part of a court record is in fact public document. But there was a request that a certain document that was handed in and became part of the court record be treated as confidential. And the court actually stated, and the document I'm referring the court case I'm referring to is Independent Newspapers versus Minister for Intelligence Services, Freedom of Expression Institute, in Ray, Marcella versus President of the Republic of South Africa, and another. The reference is contained in my opinion. And in this instance, the court indicates that it does have the necessary power to determine whether a document is already confidential or not. Now, that is a power that National Assembly Rule 157 sub 1 gives this committee as well. The court says that when you decide whether to treat a document is confidential or not, it must consider all the relevant circumstances specific to the case before it decides whether it is in the interest of justice for the document to be disclosed or not. In this instance, I would also advise the committee to decide whether it is in the public interest for the document to be used in that matter. What the committee in this instance must consider are, in my opinion, three main factors. The one is that this committee was only presented with three pages of a forensic report. That report, or the document that the committee was given, was up to page 65, that was 63, 4, and 5, which indicates that the document could be at least 66 pages. Subsequently, I found an unauthorized disclosed copy of the document, which indicated that there were about 140 pages or more, which makes it even more problematic, because forensic reports often stipulate
certain facts, only to either refute them later or confirm them later. And from those three pages, I cannot advise the committee what part of the report that those three pages in fact are. It does mean that the origin of those three pages are problematic. Furthermore, the three pages are not received from the original source. That further means that what is contained in those three pages might be contaminated. It is not that difficult now that with electronic equipment to quickly replace one word with another. So all of those things are quite uncertain aspects about the document that the committee must consider when deciding whether it is confidential or not. Secondly, the document is subject to attorney-client privilege. Now that is one of the two privileges that South African law also recognizes. It is furthermore an international privilege that is being claimed here. In other words, there are some international implications. Now, it does not mean that this document is totally excluded from use. There is the possibility that any kind of privilege can be waived by the client. However, from the three pages, I cannot ascertain whether Seristar is, in fact, the client who will be able to waive. It seems from newspaper reports that Seristar indicated that they have permission. I cannot even not tell the committee whether that is in fact the case. It quite often happens that where a company is being investigated at the request of another, that the investigator comes and takes the report themselves. But that doesn't mean that it's there right away. So there is a process. We'll have to ascertain with the client. The client will have to wait to make the document public. But at this point in time, my advice would be that the document should not be treated as public. It's too big a risk for Parliament to use the document in its current state. And it would not be advisable to rely on that document. Yes, Honourable Nathan Koch.
Madam Chair, thank you. I did read the opinion and with interest. The question I'll ask is a very simple one, Madam Chair. Is the question of parliamentary privilege. Now, traditionally, if you make a speech in Parliament, then you are covered under parliamentary privilege. What is the status of a member of Parliament in a portfolio committee? Thank you, Madam.
I'll take a comment now on the question and then, get from the top. Honourable Hill Lewis?
What precisely, you said that in two risks, what precisely is the risk in Parliament?
But I do think we all have got to listen carefully, all of us. Over to you,
or over to Sandra Nova. Thank you, Madam Chief. First of all, in respect of privilege, the Constitution speaking about privilege refers to Parliament as well as the committee. So when using in a committee, that is in fact the case. However, there is legal opinion that where a member uses a document that should not be used and that is actually confidential, that there might be an issue of consent. But that becomes a disciplinary issue. So there is an issue of that. Then in respect of the risk, the document, the three-page document, because the origin cannot be ascertained, first of all, and because the document is not complete, it would be exact, and I'm going to try and explain the risk by using a straightforward example. It would be the exact same thing if Parliament uses a chain letter that comes by email to hold someone accountable for facts stated in that email. We do not know if the facts are correct. We do not know if the email is in fact the first original document that was sent out, whether all the facts contained in it was contained in the original document. So you run the risk of using an incorrect document based on incorrect facts. It has, and also with respect to forensic reports, it often happens that the person who requested the investigation does not concur with the findings of the investigation. It is not a document that should be viewed in isolation.
There are often recommendations made based on things that might not be supported by evidence. It could be a document that might be used rather in a disciplinary matter versus a criminal matter. And to ascertain all of those aspects, you need access to a full original document.
It was on this basis that in also studying this myself, as I'm sure every member did so in this committee, one was of the opinion, as chairperson of the committee, to exercise the delegated powers, as it were, from the Speaker's office, because the committee too is delegated, you know, from the Speaker's office, to say Parliament, and to make a ruling. The ruling is this, very simply, that actually we do require a response from the DTI. There are questions that were raised here to Ms. Zolk, DED Zolk of the DTI, with respect to this. I'm sure we're all aware of that, and what I since learned was the difficult issue, you know. I don't want to make a joke of this, but I don't know if they need to say something. There we are, you know, as I said, it has been better. Notwithstanding that I spent 4 hours on Saturday just looking at these documents over for all their feet since they began, as it were, and taking them home for further study. So, having done that, I do believe that we would be best advised, members, not to go further with the set of sole documents in any way whatsoever, but that there is a need, as a mandate of this committee and with DTI, that there is a very real need, which the Honourable Harris raised earlier, and to the Honourable Turok, for that matter, among us in 2009. And it is very, very important for us to a response from DTI in this matter. And we will get that. So, at this point in time, no, we will not consider the Senate-style document in any way whatsoever in this committee, per se. Except as referred to in the by the DDG on matters that directly relate to the information itself. But I do not want these documents in the committee per se, although one must also say that the Honourable Mayor, and every right to be here, is just one of these things that arose, and I'm quite certain that all of us are learning some area, you know, how to walk on these matters for the first time. I want to confirm that indeed I am myself walking very cautiously, which is not frequent, very cautiously in this direction. And I hope that members will accept that ruling. I think I've only made two rulings since I've been chair. The second. And I must ask you to respect that. Thank you. Honourable Neil Lewis.
Well, obviously we respect your position as chair to make rulings. I'm afraid we can't agree with the ruling and must place on record our objection for the following reasons, chairperson.
Yeah, would you slow down? We'd like to take that.
Sure. Firstly, chair, the document is already well and thoroughly in the public domain. Ferrisol has confirmed by the South African spokesperson that the document is there. It's been published in at least 6 national newspapers before and after this committee meeting. In fact, it was published in greater detail in the Mail and Guardian long before this committee meeting ever took place. That's the first reason, Chair. Secondly, we are not assuming that the document makes a state of the fact. The advocate suggested that we should not take the document as fact, have lost sight of the rest of the document. The point is, Chair, we're not taking it as fact. We are simply using it as a source with which to put a question to the DPI and ask them to confirm whether what the document says is fact or not. We are not assuming it's fact. We are asking them if it's fact. That's the second point. The third point, Chair, is that it's obviously and significantly in the public interest to know whether a reported 3 billion euro investment is in fact only a 60 million euro investment. That's obviously in the public interest. And fourthly, Chair, Mr. Mania tabled two documents when he was in this committee. One was the report in question, or the three pages of the report in question. The second was a letter from the minister, which he gave to Mr. Herman, which confirmed the same information. And that's a letter on the public record in response to the parliamentary question, which confirmed the same information. So whether we use the three documents, the three-page documents, or the letter from the minister is beside the point. The information contained therein has already been confirmed. That's the fourth reason, Chair. The fifth reason is that I think if we were to discount this document and give the DPI an opportunity to slip away without accounting to the information therein, it would amount to an attempt by this committee to protect the DPI from real accountability on a very important matter. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, just with respect to the minister's letter, obviously, we should not comment on that because then that will be commented on. I thought I made it clear the DPR will respond, that we will just simply not have the document here. I hope that that is clear. As you quite rightly say, the information that you requested, Dominic, is contained in the ministerial letter that confirms some conflict. And that's fine. So we're not commenting on that per se in the ruling. Thank you. Yes, Honourable Elder.
Madam Chair, a question of clarification for the application of the murder. I might have missed, but I just want to make sure what you said regarding Honourable Matthew's question with regards to privilege in committee.
Yeah.
And then also you said that one can be might be guilty of contempt. Now that I presume the contempt of court. Or could it be contempt of parliament? And can you just clarify in terms of which legislation that would be? Okay, thank you. And then, Madam Chair, I just need to put on record that I think that this committee, and I think that you are giving in that direction, that we must be transparent, or we must force DPR to be transparent in all matters, and that's part of our oversight role. So I do support the leadership convention that you've got. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable It is most regrettable that from one point of view, that is a pure committee portfolio point of view, that the Wednesday is being dedicated to the National Development Plan. However, of course, I'm sure we will welcome that on the other hand. But it did mean that we have to move this to Friday the 15th, this engagement. Now, I do hope, notwithstanding that it is a Friday, that we will see the same quorum that the Honourable Kadirdi is able to persuade to come to a committee. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking of putting it under the chair. So we get that quorum, because I think it's a matter of the Miss Honourable Elders, as you probably know more than other opposition members, having been here in the committee possibly longer than some, has not been something that hasn't been raised by Mr. Harris, the Honourable Harris, in this committee. It has been raised, and I want to repeat by the Honourable Tura, the Duke, Alana, and many others, being raised. And we are dealing with it. There is no attempt by this committee to hide anything. I think we need to be frank. We are concerned with is money creating the jobs? Is money allocated creating the jobs? All of these things. You are concerned. I am concerned. The committee is concerned. And if anything you believe or think we're not getting to the bottom of, raise it on Friday. Please, please, Honourable Gaines. I'm now closing off to the Honourable Gaines.
Thank you, Chair. I'm very glad that the DTI will be here on the 16th of March. But I believe that we have, so we're happy with your decision on that. But we have offered, my colleagues have offered five compelling reasons why this committee should, in fact, have cited that document. Those are compelling arguments, and I would recommend that you put the issue to the vote.
I take your point, Honourable Gaines. Honourable Whip, please, I'm not going to have more hands, but your last comment.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. What is important here is that this committee has never, ever tried to suppress any debate, has never tried to undermine any transparency in this parliament. In fact, the way it has operated in the past, actually, I think that it went overboard in some of the issues. So what I want to bring to the record is that, one, this committee supports your ruling. Number two, it supports the issue that the DCI must come to account, as it was demanded by this committee long time ago. Well, because the issue of national industrial participation is linked to the issue of job creation. So, being job creation, being a priority of the government, this committee is faced with the work of ensuring that jobs are being created. So, number three is the issue of that document. I think that unless we get the permission from the originator of this document, we cannot use it again. Thank you.
Right. I have certainly heard the points made here. There is, in fact, only one I would sharply disagree with, and that is the publication of reports in the media, adding authenticity to it. I am sure that every member sitting here would agree, once it is on further reflection, that in no court of law would they accept that because this was published in the media, it was authentic. Notwithstanding that the document may be. No. That I'm going to go the route Honourable James is suggesting. If I've noted that, perhaps I should have made it clear, I will take it on board and we'll go forward in that manner. I hadn't intended doing that, but if that is the request being made here, we will pursue it. Yes. So we are now going
I speak to a DS member?
Well, you know, of course, coming from a different party, I will allow you.
Madam Chair, with the greatest respect to my colleague, Mr. Jones, I really think it is church and unnecessary to ask for a vote. This portfolio committee is voting the nation. I think we have a very good relationship. All right, we do have a bit of a sergeant major chairperson, but we are a good committee doing a good job. And I think there is no disagreement, as I gather, even from the members of the governing party, who don't want to find out whether this money has been invested. So, and there's, I've been convinced, well, I must say, I came unconvinced that we were prepared to open it. I mean, I really would appeal to my colleague, Mr. James, to withdraw that proposal. I really don't think there's a necessity for any vote. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, quite in line in our persuaded policy procedure, Honourable James.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I do not withdraw my recommendation, and I'm certainly not being churlish in doing that. Thank you.
No, I think we need people sometimes take their cue from our colourful speech. Let us then proceed in the manner that I will be advised. Right, let me put it to the vote then. I would like to ask members to take their seats. ANC. The Honourable Salah, ANC. يارب خديبة أمتي يارب عبدالعبة أمتي يارب خباسة أمتي. Those who wish to abstain, please raise your hand. Starting from the third of the Honourable Coxey from Kirk, the Honourable McIntosh from Kirk. The decision of the committee then, based on the vote, is that we do not place the document before the committee to peruse and utilize in their work. Thank you very much. We now move from that, if I may, and may we continue now with the rest of the program. Thank you very much. Honourable Hildur is here. Honourable, you know, and I'm mentioning the names of the subcommittee. That's what I'm doing right now. Honourable McIntosh, and of course Honourable Kobasa. I may just add that the other person from the AMC who has not been attending this year, am I correct? The subcommittee, the Honourable Kamala, is that correct? And then the two, the person from the VA was replaced, as was Ms. Cotsby in co-signed, the Honourable McIntosh. I should just note that. We are now at just getting towards 20 past 10, then place this before you, Honourable Kobasa, to lead us on and to address us on the matter. And just to remind, someone here on the staff, is it, to just remind DTI that they must return at 11 o'clock sharp. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me refer members of the committee to the document titled Final Report of the Subcommittee on Gambling, Consideration of the Gambling Review Commission's Report dated 6 March 2012. Let me start by drawing the attention of the committee to the fact that the Subcommittee on Gambling was constituted by the portfolio committee as follows. N. Kobasa leading the committee, F. Kumalo, CM Bolti, and Mr. J. Mara. And in the course of its work, some members have had to be substituted due to other changes. And Mr. McIntosh, G. McIntosh, or Honorable McIntosh, and Honorable G. Lewis were brought into the committee. The terms of reference as found on page 2. One was that the subcommittee has considered the conclusions and recommendations of the Gambling Review Commission's report, consider the outcomes of the submission from the proposed public hearing, present or propose core issues for the committee's deliberation and consideration, propose conclusions and or recommendations for the committee's deliberation and consideration, and lastly to consider possible amendments to the relevant legislation. I'm not going to read page by page, otherwise it will take up until tomorrow to deliberate on the matter. Right up front, I want to draw your attention to the end page 39, starting from page 39. No, from page 30, the summary of the recommendation right up to the last page. Let me try and take you through the report without reading paragraph by paragraph or sentence by sentence. The first area that we looked at was the national lottery. I want to refer you to paragraph 2.21 and the second paragraph thereof. Let me just start by reading the first paragraph so that it makes sense. At present, the Act has great areas regarding the licensing of the National Lottery Operator and the extension period before the termination of the old license and the awarding of the new license, especially where there are unforeseen delays in the issuing of the new license. The subcommittee was of the view that these great areas should be clarified as a matter of agency. Firstly, the definition of a political office bearer must be amended in relation to the licensing of the National Lottery Corporation. Secondly, that the minister should be allowed the discretion to provide for a reasonable extension period for the current operator between the termination of the old license and the awarding of the new license. We took a view that given what happened in the previous round of application, where the license had had to be suspended due to the court proceeding, the lotto was not operational for a couple of months. We then thought we should recommend to this committee that the minister should be given power to extend the operation of the lottery. For a period of time to allow whatever delay may occur in the future in granting the license. The issue relating to the location of lottery machines, we acknowledge that the idea, the approach adopted by the National Lottery revenue maximization. However, we have some reservations regarding the location of the lottery machine. Precisely because the current location of the lottery machine was determined by the NLB as part of the operator's license condition. We also view that, we are of the opinion that the access by minors to lottery, national lottery, should be monitored by the NLB, and the monitoring function be funded by the operator as part of the license agreement, so that you protect the minors from accessing the lottery. In other words, protect the minors from gambling, because we consider lottery. On winning, given the tendency for large lottery winners to spend the winning irresponsibly, we thought that we should recommend that should any good body win a large sum of the winning, that person, it should be mandatory that the person should undergo financial management training. But we were careful not we recommended that it be mandatory that the financial management training be undergone by a testing in order to avoid a situation where a testing would simply have this big winning and then simply blow it away. We think that the purpose of winning a large sum of money should be to enable that country to make a further, better economic contribution to the country, rather than just blowing the money with all sorts of luxuries and so on and so on. And therefore, consider reinvesting in a productive manner the large sum of money. And that's why we are making that proposal, and we are saying it must be mandated. The issue relating to the distribution agency and their accountability to the National Lottery Board, there has been a disjunction between the National Lottery Board and the distribution agency. They were operating like almost like free agents. And we are saying that there must be a way of making them accountable to the National Lottery Board. In fact, we are making a proposal now in view of the fact that there have been challenges in terms of the backdrop that has been experienced in deciding, in processing the application and making the allocation. We are proposing that a lean structure under the National Lottery Board be established, which is full-time employed, so that it carries out the function of receiving the application, processing the application, and making the allocation immediately, so that you don't have this backlog and applicants having to wait for up to as long as 2 or more years for the application to be approved, to the extent that some of these organizations have had to close down because they were not receiving
Just, yeah, I think
what
we set in mind here.
Okay. As a speaker, we are suggesting that the application department be revised. We think that the small and especially rural organizations are disadvantaged by a similar application form and similar criteria used to judge whether they should be allocated funds or not. We're then proposing that a simplified form, in other words, a two-tier kind of form, be created, and the two-tier criteria be arrived at where you are able to facilitate the application of the small organization run day, so that they are able to access the lottery funds in a less cumbersome manner. Because what we have now is a well-established organization being able to access those funds, and yet the much needed small and rural organization find it difficult to find to access those funds because of the cumbersome form and the difficult criteria. The thing that process has got to be facilitated. Better linked to that, we are saying a lot more funds have got to be allocated to rural organizations. But especially we are also saying that the funds that the National Lottery Board distributes must speak to the priorities of government. Also, we are saying that the National Lottery Board must have the capacity to verify the existence of the applying organization. It must have the capacity to verify the project that the organization purports to be services that the organization purports to be giving to a particular community. And it must further assess whether the service that that organization is giving to the community has a positive effect on the beneficiary. In this case, what we consider the beneficiary is the immediate community where that project is or where that service is being given. So that you don't have a situation where funds are simply given out to organizations, but there is no way in which you verify the existence of that organization. There's no way in which you verify whether the purported project or service is in fact what is alleged to be given, and whether the receiving community is benefiting sufficiently from that. And therefore, and that's why we are linking that also to the currently the five priorities of government. And we have certainly there will be other priorities as administration change from time to time. But all the time you are saying don't have a fund, wherever they are, they must be to the priorities of government, they must be to the direct beneficiaries. On page 6, we have been alerted to the fact that there are illegal lotteries going on. For instance, conducted by the life of the FNB, Coca-Cola, for instance, and the telephone industry. And the National Lottery Board does not have any control over those lotteries, which go under what is called promotional competition or marketing competition. We're saying that the National Lottery Board must be given legal powers to authorize those lottery activities from those institutions. On page 7, we are talking to the proposed legislative amendment. Let me just quickly read through that. Paragraph 2.6. The Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry has recommended that the DTI should initiate amendments to the National Lottery Act during the process of appointing the NLC board members in 2008. The subcommittee on gambling is of the view that such amendments should include provisions to enable the NLC to enforce the Act through court action where it is not able to do so. Establish a professionalized grant-making institution. I've made reference to that issue. In other words, it doesn't mean, let me explain this, it doesn't mean that you are looking at what we call a profession. We are saying that this must be a full-time small corporation which should look at the day-to-day running or granting of the fund. The formalized the relationship between the NLC and the proposed grant-making institution to address the anomalies that were taking place between the NLC and the agency. Address the bottleneck in the Act regarding distribution of funds, including the legal requirements for the application process, and empower the NLC to set norms and standards that govern promotional competition. The gambling regulatory framework let me quickly draw the attention of the committee to the fact that gambling done with lottery. We're done going into gambling now. Let me draw to the attention of the committee to the fact that gambling is a concurrent competence. It is the National Gambling Board and the provincial gambling regulatory authority. Now, we in the working group, and I think the gambling review commission made this point, agree with the commission that there seems to be this juncture between the National Gambling Board and the provincial gambling regulatory authority. And the thing that there should be amendment of the act to strengthen cooperative government between the two structures. That is also inconsistent among the provinces themselves, where you find a province giving license to for one gambling activity and another one giving license to another and so on, and they are inconsistent. We think that there should be a way of bridging those two consequences. And we suggest that there should be norms and standards that should apply nationally to address that particular issue. We noted as well that there were problems in terms of, and this is the second issue linked to gambling, there were problems in terms of the National Gambling Policy Council. In terms of just this meeting, not correcting and therefore not addressing the issues that we are supposed to address. And we think that there must be a way of strengthening that body so that it is able to meet as regularly as is prescribed by the Act. We do not agree with the view of the review commission saying that they must meet. Discuss policy, but they shouldn't take decisions. We think that they should take decisions and enforce the implementation of those decisions as the national policy. However, the real issue here is about the concurrent powers, and that is where Jefferson resorts the advice of the legal advisor, parliamentary legal advisor, advocate for the president. And Jefferson, with your permission, could I allow the advocate to take us through that area? That includes also the request that was made by the manufacturers, I think, I don't know, who wanted to be exempted from the speaker.
Point out the government of the subcommittee. Obviously, you're being allowed to add, but there's any other discussion, but they have faced it all. I'm sure you would concur. As a standard member.
Thank you, Nancy. First of all, in respect of the concurrent power, you all know that gambling is a Table 4 matter. That means that Parliament, as well as the legislature, have concurrent legislative power. This simply means that both on a national level and a provincial level, legislation may be made and promulgated related to gambling activity. The issue that came up is how do you deal with legislation at these two levels? And first of all, where the legislation can be complement each other, the provincial legislation maybe goes a little bit deeper into more practical issues, maybe specific to the province, and they don't conflict, then the two pieces of legislation can be coexist, and that is how they are implemented. The problem that might arise with something like this is that you might duplicate duties. So there might be some overburdened place on licensees.
simply because in terms of the national situation, there is one unit that might be repeated in a different format on the provincial legislation. The way to deal with that is simply that with the Constitution as well as the subsequent Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, there is methods to integrate intergovernmental cooperation. I am also aware that on maybe a less formal manner, national departments together with the provincial counterparts often enter into memorandums of understanding which set out how things will work. And it's quite possible to make sure that, you know, compliance by one might result in a report to the other which will be deemed to be compliant with both. Something like that is quite easy to resolve, but it can be done outside of legislation. The problem that is more of a severe nature is where your national legislation and your provincial legislation do not speak to each other and where they are in conflict. But in that instance, the Constitution gives a very clear guideline in section 146. And where your national legislation has a uniform application over the whole country and it deals with subject matter that is of a national nature, something like that has to be applied all over, it's not applicable to one province, or if it is necessary to have some form of uniformity, which actually from this report we see, that need for uniformity is clearly identified. In those aspects, also where national legislation deals with things that deal with economic unity, promotion of economic activity, promotion of equal opportunity, things like that national legislation will prevail. It doesn't mean that the provincial legislation becomes invalid, it simply becomes inoperable. So the national legislation stands the norm set, the uniform application will prevail and must be applied in the provinces. The one thing that must be kept in mind is that from a national legislative perspective, it is necessary that Parliament still distinguishes between its mandate of having national oversight versus provincial legislatures having provincial oversight. So where you set norms and standards, where you do create this uniformity, where you do provide for economic activity, development, etc., that if there is an oversight function included in legislation, that must only be in respect of national entities. So where there are provincial entities, oversight will be limited to provincial legislation. That doesn't mean that there can't be a national body like we actually have here, the National Gambling Board and the National Gambling Policy Committee, that has a clear interaction and a reporting function, an evaluation function in respect of the provincial entities. Of course, then that National Gambling Board will report to Parliament, and that is where the oversight can filter through to a provincial level without stipulating specifically in the legislation. The next question was in relation to the Financial Intelligence Centre Act, and I'm going to refer to the speaker. If I say speaker, that is the act that I'm referring to. A question came up from manufacturers regarding a statement or a section within the National Gambling Act that states, in section 37.2b, that states that any licensee must comply with every applicable provision of CETA. Now, they were wanting to be exempted, and they were saying, but they understand that, you know, there isn't, they couldn't indicate a specific application to them, but they felt uncomfortable with this being a blanket application. The problem, however, is that if you look at CETA, and the fact that the National Gambling Act only states the applicable sections of CETA, and you look at what is applicable to manufacturers within CETA, we find that it's only two sections that are of a very general application and only have a reporting duty effect in a specific general situation. And those two situations are where business owners, employees, etc. become aware of a suspicious transaction, and that must be reported. That is section 39 of CETA, and in CETA, where cash or bulk and bearer documents are being transported either outside of the country or into the country. Now, those two general sections would not become
manufacturers the agreement from. It's something that is applicable to every citizen in the country. And its objective is to have this report of suspicious activity when they take place be made to the Financial Intelligence Center. So it is not an undue burden. And I think more what the manufacturers are concerned about is whether they are accountable institutions or reporting institutions. But the Act is quite clear that those institutions are only if they carry on the business of making available a gambling activity as contemplated in Section 3 of the National Gambling Act. That is described in the National Gambling Act as clearly stating either the placing or accepting of a bet or a token data bet, playing or making available bingo, playing an amusing game or interactive game or making it available. It's quite clear that if you manufacture a machine, you are not involved in a gambling activity. You are simply manufacturing the machine. Same for if you import the machine, that's not the same as a gambling activity. So there must be a clear line. Where the manufacturer has a little back office and he makes maybe the dad machines available for some informal betting, well, that's a gambling activity. And then that must fall under the Act. So it is superfluous to put in an Act that a person or group of persons are exempted from the application of an Act if the Act is not applicable in the first place. The legislature is presumed not to put something in an Act that does not have meaning, and therefore if that is placed in the Act, lawyers all over South Africa are going to try and find out exactly what is applicable in CICA. They're going to have quite a hard time, but they will find something because it's easier in the legislative state that there is something that is applicable. So it is going to be difficult, and I would recommend that that extension be made.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Advocate Bandamaba. I should just say that Alevis will have a little time to clean up as well. Just to ensure that we do, once again, comply with the position that Parliament, the National Assembly, has clearly pointed out to us, as you know, about 18 months ago or a year ago, that this is a subcommittee, yes, a subcommittee, but not a working group. And therefore, you know, work within those rules here in Parliament. I just say that I'm sure we're all aware of that, and we'll take working groups to mean subcommittee, but we will just get that. I hope you will accept that. But at this point, and Honourable Mugabe has placed his input as the chair of the subcommittee, we then turn to additional members of that. Honourable McIntosh. He hasn't said
no. Madam Chair, I certainly don't want to make any other interventions, but I think this is a very important issue. And our chairman has been a superb chairman. He makes haste slowly, but he knows that this is a complicated matter, and he's been a very good leader, and it's been great to work with him as our leader. So I don't want to, and I'm not going to make any other interventions. But I think what the committee should appreciate is that our chairman has highlighted, and I think other people have, that one of the problems is the coordination between province and nation. And there is, in fact, a very good system called the National Gambling Policy Council. But it does not correlate. There's no proper thing. So we just feel that's a really important thing, because you get a situation where things are happening in different areas, and the chairman has obviously led us into taking a strong stand on that, and I think some of the proposals which he outlined and is outlining will help to deal with that problem.
Yes. Sorry, Honourable McIntosh, but I feel that this better suit is coming in a bit later, but I didn't want to cut you short there as such, because I think it's a very valid point that we've made on several occasions, that has also by yourself. Honourable Kovansa, I think you're still concluding, are you? Yeah. Thank you, Advocate Bandamaba. Right.
Gentlemen, that's a pretty easy. Given the title of mine, let me then alert you to page 8.
where the committee then makes a recommendation on this particular matter. That will be strengthened later by the full recommendation of the PEP. If you look at the third paragraph of page 8, we are saying that the subcommittee in Office knew that legislation should be strengthened by allowing the minister to make regulations regarding corporate governance principles for the meeting of the GPC. We emphasize the corporate governance principles that must apply in this instance to assist the National Policy Council to meet and play this role. I don't want to read the whole of that paragraph. There are better suggestions in that. But also, the last paragraph on page 8, where we say in the subcommittee recommends that there be a memorandum of understanding between the PGRA and the NGC to regulate their relationship and how to ensure that the uniformity is implemented in the national and provincial legislation. We need to be aware that the very fact that the issue of gambling has been placed under trade and industry, but that this is a matter of national economic interest. And that, therefore, we are cognizant of the concurrent nature of the relationship between the two bodies, the NGC and the provinces. What should reign supreme in our view is the very fact that this is a matter of national economic importance. And therefore, the corporate government between the two, collaboration, coordination, and a strong national policy council that is able to drive this kind of cooperation between the groups here. It's not just a matter of provinces, maximizing their revenue, and the NGP simply playing the regulatory function and it ends there. It's a matter of national economic importance. And therefore, it should be taken in that kind of sense. And that is why we are saying, even insofar as gambling is concerned, the overarching principle should be that the activities in gambling should also speak to the national economic development, economic growth of the country as a whole. Jefferson, let me turn to the sensitive issue of online gambling, and that's where we would like to conclude on the matter before taking the committee through the actual recommendation. We are saying that online gambling is a complex matter, but that through the public hearing, through consultation with various role players and stakeholders and experts, it is clear that there is no way that we should ignore legislating on online gambling, because it is taking place in any case and it is illegal. However,
sorry, Chair. Sorry to interrupt, we're just going back and forth and I'm getting a bit lost. Which specific number are we on now?
Page 30, page
number of different copies. What page is it? Yeah. I'm not speaking
on online gambling. Page 30. Well, I think it is 6.8.
I'm making a general observation that the online gambling is happening and it is illegal in the country. But I'm also saying through the public hearing and further consultation with these different stakeholders and experts on the issue, the subcommittee is of the view that we need to legalize online gambling. However, we are saying that we should not open the floodgates and simply say we legalize online gambling. That's the end of the story. We must be specific on what gambling activity must be allowed online. And you are making this suggestion that all the online gambling activities which are legal in the country should now be allowed online. However, we are aware that there are other activities that are not legal. For instance, greyhound racing is taking place, it's illegal. Bush racing, harness racing, and a number of others. We are then suggesting that even on those that are illegal. Let me give a very practical example. We are saying that bush racing and horse race harnessing should be legalized and it should be integrated into the mainstream of horse racing. And therefore allowed online as well. Meaning betting we are aware that the subcommittee has been warned by the Financial Intelligence Center on, for instance, poker and betting exchange, that those are activities which, when carried online, become very extremely difficult to monitor, and they are vehicles for all sorts of illegal activities, including money laundering, funding of terrorist activities, etc. And therefore, the committee must consider those, some of those very serious.
The 6.5 and around that part, I'm sure you
know. Yes. And so, Chairperson, effectively we are saying we can't just allow a blanket legalization of online gambling. We must be specific on the activities that we want to allow and clamp down on those activities that the country cannot allow. Secondly, we are saying that where the operator is from outside, outside of the country, that operator should register in the country as a company in terms of South African law and have a physical office and its operation information and everything that they do is accessible to the National Gambling Board
and other law enforcement agencies that are operating in the country. The other issue that we oppose, the other issue linked to that is allowing international international players to tap onto the South African legalized online gambling. That matter needs to be further looked into, especially with regard to the WTO rules. And therefore, we are saying that the CCI must come back to the committee on those matters so that we know what it is that we need to do and we do not flout or undermine the WTO rules. The two areas that we think need further consultation and investigation by the CCI in this matter, it is a very hard rating, precisely because that once we have listened to the operators in the industry, we have not been able to consult extensively with the animal welfare organization. And we think that the DCI must allow that space for better holistic consultation and investigation before firm decisions are taken on the issue of greyhound racing. That goes for FASI as well. We do not think that DICE and CAD should be allowed, precisely because they are students in the school and the young people are involved in that. And we are saying in those instances, an awareness and education program has got to come into form to alert the minors and young people, particularly learners in the school, against the dangers of gambling, including developing tendencies problem gambling. We are making very concrete proposals with regard to player protection on page 33. Chapter 3. And I won't go through that page by page. But basically we are saying that there should be the operators in the industry should take responsibility to make the players aware of, for instance, the chances to win or lose, and provide any relevant information that would make the player take a responsible decision whether to participate or not to participate in gambling activities. It is one thing to get into gambling simply as a form of entertainment. It is quite another to consciously say I'm going there to gamble to me. And therefore if I haven't won, I'm going to play for as long as it's necessary and for as long as I have money in my pocket or in my account. And therefore we must be careful that we protect the players in that regard, and that the operators should take responsibility to alert the players in that. Further, we are saying that the accessibility of gambling activity has got to be restricted. We are acutely aware that, for instance, the electronic bingo machine are found in public spaces like shopping malls and so on and so on. We are suggesting that saying, we are not saying that they should be closed down altogether. We are saying, however, access to those gambling activities has got to be attended to. That includes the accessibility to ATM, which we saw, for instance, in some of the electronic bingo area, where they were easily visible and easily accessible. And we are saying that that has got to be attended to. That's as far as I would like to go and refer the committee then to paragraph 8, the whole of it from page 41, page 38 to the end, where we are making the summary of the conversation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Subcommittee on Gambling, Honourable Kobasa. We then gave to answer Honourable Hill Lewis, member of that committee, if he wishes to add anything, please do so now from the Subcommittee.
All that I can say is that most of the content of this report was unanimously agreed by the subcommittee. Insofar as we had the minor difference from time to time, we usually had very thorough and good debates until we had formed consensus. So there's not much point of disagreement at all. The only thing that I'd like to add, Chair, something that has been a bugbear of mine on the subcommittee and something which members of the full committee must feel free to add their voice to, is the issue of the protection of gamblers and the protection of consumers of gambling services. And those are found 8.6.4 and also in the section that the chairperson of the subcommittee just read in online gambling. And really, I think there's an opportunity for us to significantly expand the scope of how consumers of gambling are protected in South Africa. And we, as a subcommittee, have put down several ideas, but those ideas are by no means exhaustive, and members should feel free to add to them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hill Lewis. Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, I concur. We had a very happy committee, and we all worked well together, I think. Of course, we had very good committee service from Margo Hurley and Andre Hammer, which worked up for us. But if I could say, any slight concern that I have is that it's Greyhound Racing. We had the FCCA giving us evidence, and they have been the premier animal welfare body in South Africa. They do big. They even have an act of parliament. So my own concern is that they gave us evidence. Obviously, they've got a certain position, and they like to ban horse racing, they like to ban they probably I'm putting words in their mouth. But what I'm saying is they have a point of view, and it's good that we should have a body like FCA and understand it, because we don't want to have cruelty to animals. But my concern is that the opportunity, from my perspective, and the government in the top of greyhound racing and caution, and it isn't in the report, and it needn't have been, but one could actually establish a cooperative or more than one to own the dogs, to have the guys involved. And I think it's a real opportunity, also that harness racing, or cavalera, as we call it, tripling of horses, could well contribute to, as I see it, bringing in an authentic black element into this part of what, not me, but many South Africans enjoy relaxing and doing. So I just you share a problem, I might add. that's the only thing I would add. But I think the chief executive of Pumalana, who's present in this room, also sees gambling as what we would call a sin issue. And we know what sin is. Somebody says it's sort of a capital I and a little B. Good. But the point is, it's got to be recognized, and as a responsible government, one needs to regulate it and have laws for it. So I think we've done the best we can under Mr. Barbaro's leadership, and I think we've got a good report. It's only for subcommittee, and it's only for consideration, and for the judge, obviously. But I think we've had a very interesting time, I must say, and I've learned a few times.
One truly pleased to hear that a lot of learning has taken place. But may I also, on behalf of the committee, Honourable Kovalsa, may I also congratulate you as chairperson on the subcommittee on gambling and your team worked very hard. And you've managed to work together so effectively, we've heard, so that we're able to get some very constructive recommendations put forward to the committee. The committee is coming back to the portfolio committee, and this, of course, is the Gambling Review Commission report that DTI undertook to set up the commission. And we really need to congratulate you, Honourable Kovalsa, and I know the time that you have personally put me here, the support staff, the minimum, the hearing, and indeed the members sacrificing a Saturday. Now that underpins your commitment as far as I'm concerned. Truly, thank you. Now, on that note of great thanks, may we have a comfort break for a short while, a spot of tea, water, of course, for those who like bread and water, prison diet, and then we will return here at Prompt Park, feeling sharp. I will certainly open up the question at Prompt Park 11. Thank you.
Okay, sorry, this one. You were greatly helpful advisor, and even at the most of meetings by Mr. McDonald, which again, from the DTI and the legal department, and I think we really were appreciative of his wisdom. Thank you.
Well, I
think
the
very
effectively touched. Thank you.
How are you?
Oh, thanks. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
I'm sure you know, I asked about it, but it is.
Marvin Thomas. Until you are joined by the chief director.
That's right.
Thank also fighting crime and poverty, or reducing poverty, fighting poverty. But crime comes in a sense that it is an issue that if policies are not well implemented, unintended consequences could be there to the crime. But I think those points have also been made. So I thought I should just make that broad comment. But my last point is just a principled point that even as we have this for us, we must still note that gambling is not one of those recommended and highly appreciated practice. It is not. It is just because it is there that we seek to regulate and to reduce the negative impact that it could otherwise have. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner.
We thank you, Honourable
Chair. Chair, maybe I should follow other honourable members in the subcommittee on the Honourable Jobs and Organization of Honourable Travers. Chair, perhaps I would like the subcommittee chair, maybe as was indicated in the department, I see that there is something said about online gambling. And my concern is that as it is even accessible today that underage people would gamble, the online would be the easiest for them because we know how they access the cell phones and all that. Now, my question would be that if we did have some NGOs dealing with children that give me input on this, and secondly, I would be interested that from the department side, how do they see this being formulated into legislation? We have seen how underage children have used the cell phones, the schools, accessing phones and all those. And this, even though I can see that it is being addressed on page 37, but a way that is very going to make it that young people, youth, children, do not have access, you know, to this kind of gambling.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Honourable
Kasi.
Honourable
Kasi. Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'd like also to congratulate the subcommittee for the job well done. Even that the support staff in front of the Chairperson, what is unique about this report is that we had regular feedback, that rolling feedback about what was happening. And when a person looked at the report now, we found that all those issues which were raised on those meetings or feedback meetings, they are there addressed the way we wanted them to be addressed. So I can see that this report is sort of reflects three documents, who are willing to see these records? Let me make some
No,
the ones who draw away with the CA, I think who are one. But the first time I didn't have to mention that.
I've always done that with the MP's intention.
Chairperson, I think that professional aspect they are proposing is also that can be full time dealing with the issues of grant making. Well, I think to some extent the story we spoke about in 2009, you know, about the report. You go also to the issues of transformation check, in particular in what we're seeing in all this in the casino industry. I think it's kept up there that those industries must be transformed. That's what we want as parliament of the I think what might also come later, when we are dealing with the deal or the act itself, on the issue of responsible gambling, is the issue of those people who are giving credit at the casino. I think that's what I think that you can. Yeah, who are giving credit? So, we found that people, that's why we end up having bombers. It's a food display. Because people are owing other people money. It might not be in a formal establishment, but it can be the issue of the guidelines within that. I think that when it comes to the issue of the legislation, we can put it there so that it must be enforced. And then the issue of the National Gambling Council policy, which political service are not correct. I think that we can give it a strength of saying that if the first meeting called by the minister does not correct, the second meeting continues without keeping the quorum. So that those people who are not there, decisions will be taken on their behalf so that the country cannot be held responsible by the two irresponsible individuals. So, Chairperson, if I had my way, I would have said that let's adopt this report because there was consensus in the subcommittee, let's adopt this recommendation in this report and avoid the Friday meeting.
we're not going to consider we will avoid Friday meeting on that basis. You can imagine where we'll be going if we go down that route. But point taken, but for those who may not be aware, the VAs, of course, are the distributing agents. And of course, committee here, as you can see, not going to roll the share a joke, waste their something, but prevail under difficult conditions quite frequently. And we put it that way. So, but yes, on the other hand, or did I, Honourable Elder?
Thank you, Chair. This is a very comprehensive report and I'm quite impressed with the work done. I just have two questions, basically, and the one is about the addition, perhaps, of further oversight on this. If you look at the other industries, like the insurance industry, the credit industry, there's quite strong regulators, and they are also what they call ombudsmen, set up to assist people who are unhappy with products coming from that industry. And I think one can perhaps, from my point of view, look at perhaps establishing an ombudsman where complaints can be directed to the investigator. For the moment, as it seems, if somebody has a problem with the NLB or any other of the other provincial bodies, they must actually ask those provincial bodies to investigate themselves, which it doesn't help assist from them. So that's one recommendation I would like to make, or at least to investigate the possibility thereof. Secondly, regarding allocation of funds, I've read through the report portion here, it's not very long. It doesn't give me much direction as to how the allocations will be made. My concern comes from the charities. There are many charities whose only income, or the larger part of the income, comes from the lottery sport. And many of them are suffering, and you know, these charities take the burden off the state. They help the state to alleviate social problems that the state don't have to look after or have to deal with because of their own intervention. And I think that, from my point of view, my partner's point of view, the largest part, the bulk of any did report, and I'm seeking under correction, that some years more education has been made to the sports bodies than to charities, and I think that is not what the law should be there for. There were some years, and I can't say I'm correct, but I've read it in the newspaper that 14 institutions have given more than charities in some years. So at least a lot of the money has gone to 14 bodies. Now, obviously, I'm not really sport, I want something to go up, and I can't play. I might even play the corner one day again, if I've gone. But the thing is that, you know, charities are important. They do take the burden off from government because people won't go look for social welfare in charity systems in a various ways. So we need to give more money to charities and perhaps also looking at institutions that develop people to go into the workplace, into the marketplace and to create jobs. Those are the most important things and most certainly not sport.
Yes, so the other point of view there. Right. Just as it were making comments at this moment, and we're basically at the end of our process in which we would finalise this report for the ministers to take on board. So I'm looking down at members because the way we will proceed with this. Is that a hand on something? I'm not too sure. Yes.
Chair, in terms of what I've said and what I've heard, this report certainly is extremely well argued, well written, and whoever was involved in it from beginning to end wants to be congratulated. The quality is superb. The writing style is pleasing to the eye, and the points substantively are outstanding. We have no difficulty with it as it stands. Lots we can still debate, but the basic architecture is entirely satisfactory and acceptable. I just wanted to say that.
Right. Thank you very much, Honourable James. Honourable Ms. McIntosh.
Madam Chair, I'm sure that you and your committee team have looked at this, but I'm just looking at our program, and the implication I'm hearing of what these comments are is that the members of the committee are basically happy with what Mr. Carvalho and his team have done, and that they are prepared to get ready for Tuesday the 13th of March.
Not March,
Tuesday the 13th of March. There's a meeting on it's a proposed date for a debate on the committee's report.
Mm-hmm.
In the House, I presume. That's going to go to the Audit Act. Well, if that's the case, it sounds to me that Mr. Carvalho better start writing his speech from the nature of the comments that I've been hearing. Now, that means that Mr. Khadebe can perpetuate the great tradition of South Africa's Chaile early on Friday. why do more work than we need to do? We need to do it.
And you say
you
yourself could be a target major. But on a more serious note, alright, let me explain. I think we do need a formal proposal in this regard. However, what as the committee knows is by had sort of burned our fingers somewhat. Well, we can't afford to burn them again. Now, what we need is, once we're going on the ATC, we do need to lean towards the Hillman now and just clarify this, because what we don't want are members' letters going to, you know, given, as it were, through the speaker, and demanding all kinds of action against the chair. I mean, the next thing I know, I have to wear a, you know, protective vest or something. So, well, we don't want that. We actually want, when you get onto the ATC, you all say, Viva. Okay. Even though with the blue, right. Now, over to you.
Online, specifically on the interactive. I think, is that what
No, but that was a specific regulation that it came here. Sorry, I must just make it clear.
It does get confusing.
Yes. Which has led to a broader engagement of the committee into online gambling. Do you follow what we are saying? Now, I think if you were to wait 10 minutes in this committee or around this environment, 10 minutes, we may prevent you come, you know, we may put stop to this evening session, tomorrow evening session. But we do need this. Now, when asked Ms. Herling, you've got your laptop here, you know, had laptop will travel issues, and then she will run through with a little stick, I suppose, and say how it works. And we will organize a couple of copies. Well, well, of course, in his official commissioner, the committee was, of course, utilizing the fingers of Ms. Herling to draw. Will you do that? Now, it's 12 o'clock. It's 12 o'clock. We are asking them to return here at 12:15. Returning. Okay, we can play copy, take 5 minutes. Right. Mr. Hill,
do we still need a motion for adoption?
Once you get back.
Oh.
We have had our other forms of engagement on this matter.
Yeah. I just want to say, Chair, that at the tea break I was assailed by some concerned members of the audience today about
the not audience,
yes.
The stakeholders.
Excuse me.
We're not at the opera.
About the finality of the report. Okay. So I just want to make it clear that this is a report that goes from our committee to the department and comes back in bill format in however many months, and we have an opportunity then to debate some of the key issues again. By no means, this is by no means
the
same.
No. Just the first wrapping, you know, of past the parcel and all that kind of thing. This is just the very first part. But it is important. It is very important that we went through this process. I'm sure we all agree. And I believe it is assisted DTI no end of not having done half their work. As usual. Thank you. Yes. So now, I don't want to delay staff from only looking for an opportunity to come back later. I want them back, please. They're not really moving until they move out with a stick. And you know, you're welcome to chat. I'm going to adjourn.
The difference between cross-border and overseas. In other words, does cross-border increase overseas? Or are they addressed as three separate states?
My
interpretation of cross-border may mean just getting outside of the border across the state. Which might mean going into the southern country. Overseas might mean going
across the border. But I see here the regulation.
says to me, could order usually indicate all of your immediate neighbours, but it can also mean outside of the board, doesn't it? It depends on what the intention of the committee was, if they meant an international type of gathering, or if they simply mean that it could be a close proximity to South Africa, but not international.
I think we need a proposal here that does seem to sound important. On the one hand,
the same thing happens. I think the international would be better. Because once you go beyond it, once you go beyond the stuff, you go to Zimbabwe, it's already international. The international for a not a common military union. But at the same time, you also have to control what's happening from each side towards South Africa. So once the international, I think that they'll cover everyone.
And I think we are asking, will it cover the neighbor? Because it is a nation. On the hand of Urban, you don't look happy. No. You must, we don't want that look, if you could just give us some assurance.
Yeah, I don't see the problem with cross-border gambling. I think we talk about international gambling for a whole different set of meaning. I think cross-border means everything over our borders, and that it's used in this way for a specific, as a specific thing. I don't have a problem with the way in which it's phrased. But I might be wrong.
Well, Uncle James, I thank you for hearing that. Uncle James.
And I would agree with that. I mean, I think cross-border is sufficient. The word overseas is a very colonial word as well.
Yes. Home country, cross
international.
But it also means border. The man is over our border. Am I not right? That's what we mean. Well, there'll be everyone on board, Honorable Hilders, and followed by Honorable Barbara.
Chair, it's an interesting point that Honorable Slaus raised. I would agree with cross-border, because it refers most specifically in internet gambling to Swaziland and to the internet-based gambling that happens there. The cross-border in respect of Swaziland would be most correct.
No, we're certainly not referring only to Swaziland. No. Not at all. I don't even want that impression to be created. I mean, perception created to gamblers around here. Although it's even creating more in a labeling environment for them. Yeah. You know, because it is not only Swaziland that we are thinking of. I'm not only thinking of that peak or whatever it is. Yes. A comrade, honorable to laugh.
So I'm looking at this question because this lawyer, when they come to court, they are able to use this argument. Some British lawyer representing a company there that gambles online may argue that cross-border or something like that. I'll talk to them. But if we are comfortable that cross-border would be able to take care of this particular situation, we can talk about it.
I take your point, but after all, the Brits are all stuck in the dark ages. Yes.
are racist because it does show the application of mind to this report. And we're not rubber stamping anything. Thank you, Honourable Salah. But it has been people's sex. So now we want a formal. Oh, sorry, Honourable Abarca.
I just wanted to check, especially from the subcommittee members, if we have taken care of a situation where a banking unit is located close to a school or close to, you know, to an institution like that. Because if we have not taken care of it, I will assume that we will all unanimously agree as a need.
Yeah, we'll check immediately with the chair. Yes, the chairperson of the subcommittee.
Yeah, two things, chairperson. The first thing is that I should have made this point that we are making a proposal that all legislation relating to pet health be back on them. For instance, the question of I think the business and a couple of other things that have to do with gambling. Besides it, of course, for you to have an LPM, you must have a principal business, and the LPM becomes a secondary business. Now, if you have a shop, for instance, is part of those. Now, those are some of the things that we have to look into. And in amending those parts of legislation, I think we need to address the issue that you are raising. That's one. But also, the principle that you need to walk to a or take a drive to a gambling class.
Mm-hmm.
Has got to be maintained. It can't be that you have a gambling site that is easily reachable.
Mm-hmm.
We uphold that principle.
Mm-hmm.
And if we therefore extend it to amendments of those pieces of other legislation relating to gambling,
mm-hmm.
we must look at for instance, a shop that is not next to a school.
Mm-hmm.
Would we allow mm-hmm. that to have an MPM within that walking distance to a school? So those are things that we need to look into when we address those issues. It's part of the report, although not in the specific terms that you are making mention. But the principle is there must be a distance between a gambling site and for instance places of worship.
I think the point is made here, and we re-emphasize that this is the beginning. You know, we just can't, if you like, begin to conclude the first phase here. We will, of course, the ministry will bring table legislation here, and we will then engage directly with that legislation. I think we all have that understanding, am I correct, looking around? That it's on that basis, that we look here at our report on the Gambling Review Commission, dated the 7th of March 2012. The Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, having considered the report of the Gambling Review Commission, commissioned by the Department of Trade and Industry reports as follows. Introduction, the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, having received the Gambling Review Commission report, established a subcommittee to consider and make recommendations to the committee. The subcommittee tabled its report for the committee's consideration on the 7th of March 2012. After deliberations in the committee,
which took account of the report tabled by the subcommittee. The committee agreed to the several recommendations as noted in the report. And I understand that those were two paragraphs changed or inserted. Is that correct? So I therefore put this report to you, the Portfolio Committee for Core Support of Trading from Trading Industry on the Gambling Review Commission, and ask for a mover for the adoption of the Portfolio Committee report. I was allowed.
Can I move for adoption of the report?
Thank you very much, Honourable Salah. Seconder, Honourable James. Honourable James seconds the report. Any objections? The report has the report of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. On the report of the Gambling Review Commission has been adopted by this committee. Thank you. Honourable Mabab.
Yes, no, I just wanted to indicate that we have got people have the type of people there for another staff to be corrected. Mm-hmm. And then also the spelling on the memorandum, that in case the memorandum goes. By Pavarza, just to be corrected to address on that offense that committed. When I speak of that, when I speak of typos, let me just give one example. Under the second paragraph, under the introduction, therefore, I would think it should be wishes to make the correction.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's a good
example. No, I do think that we are all agreed on the semantics here, that they should be incorporated correctly, the spelling, the punctuation, so that a high set of standards is maintained. Really, we don't want to in any way reduce the standards of the subcommittee report that was given to us. Thank you.
Well, that's nothing in doubt, can I address another issue?
Yes,
You'll recall that roughly a month ago, when we had the National Gambling Board in front of us, we asked for the attendance register of the Policy Committee.
Yes.
Can we have a progress update and when we'll receive that?
Now, I do remember us specifically requesting that. I'm looking at the parliamentary liaison of the trade on industry. I think perhaps, although that was said in committee, it, I'm now told by the committee, a secretary, we need a formal decision. You want to make a proposal?
Well, Chair, I was under the impression, I remember specifically asking at that meeting where it was.
You know, without directly turning this into adding almost another agenda item, as it were, I think the chief director, the NG, may not have been there. I'm just wondering, was the BDG present at that meeting? Yes. I think it was probably apropos of the comments you may have made with respect to the policy structure. And I think that was where the question was raised because it was a matter of concern that things were just not getting anywhere, as it were, in words to that effect that you communicated to us. And I think it was on that basis, and then I understood that probably, I'm not sure if we asked the committee register or what, and I'm looking for almost advice here from a legal advisor, from other committee members as to where we should go. Because that definitely had been posed in committee. And I mean, I'm not getting, no, I've noticed this with Arnold Hill, and I'm trying to deal with exactly that issue. Yes. Because really, I think it's up to the committee now at this point. Yes, I'm not condemning.
Chairperson, when you look at that issue, I know that I was not ill in that meeting. I was not ill in that meeting. But, Chair, when you look at the composition of the college, national assembly college, it involves the MEC, of which they are oversighted by their select committees in the province where they come from. I think that what we have to do here at Nishan is to enable the minister, because I don't think that the minister, if the minister was not attending, it could have been our BDA. Yeah. But I think by the effect that is conveyed by the minister, I think that the minister did attend. That's why then, initially when I said that, we have to enable this council to work, so that as moving forward, let's say that if the first meeting does not correct, the second meeting is that the core of the people could still make it here. Because it cannot be held and planned by the people who are responsible. But when it comes to the issue of those MECs, well, I think that it is their telecommunities in the province that this one oversight that. That's the hand you see a meeting, Chairperson.
You see, I think this is why committee members need to be on their toes. We agree to certain things, we hear them raised in committee. Raised in committee under many questions and response to the report we received. And there were many members from different parties who commented on the same and raised the same concern as yourself, as you know, on the Hill News. Now, what I can say is that we do remain deeply concerned about this because the impression created in that committee meeting by yourself, CDG, was that this was how the actual work of the council. You know, the fact that there was no quorum. Now, I think what made it pertinent for us to get is the kind of legislation you are requiring, which enables us to be set up in the first place, and were, so that we can see, is it not possible, perhaps as other organizations run, constitutions and so on, if you don't correct, you don't just carry on not meeting and so on, you're given so many days to call another meeting, and if it doesn't correct, you go and see. But that's a subject of course. It's a subject of course. The meeting's been called timorously, within stated time, and taking into account that these MECs in the provinces and so on have huge, demanding diaries, almost as big as the ministers. They can't just be expected to drop everything and run to the policy, whatever, council. And I think if these things are taken into account, we're not going to have them carrying on about non-corrected meetings and so on. So I think it's possible, not now, but I do want to stand a comment on this at a suitable time before we rise constituency. I think aren't you returning to see us on the 16th? And I think it's that, you know, because I'm not going to say no, we shouldn't address this. I'm sure you can hear the response of your move. I think it needs to be. Alright? So, you will be there, will you, DDG, on the 16th.
Always be here, Chairman. I think I will.
who will be speaking on your behalf then? Now, I hope he's confident. Yes, sir. I have to take Honourable Hill Lewis first. He has his hand up for some time. Honourable Hill Lewis.
The most frustrating delay, because I was under the impression at that meeting that you had taken a decision to get that attendance register. I still would like the attendance register, notwithstanding the fact that the DG will address the matter at the next meeting. I would still like the attendance register, because as the Honourable Bukhadebe will know, this Parliament keeps local governments and provincial governments accountable all the time in various committees. So I would still like to ask for those attendance register despite this unnecessary delay.
Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Salam.
Because I think Honourable Congress President was attempting to put this matter to where it evolved. I'm putting myself in the shoes of the public servants who are now today asked to supervise their government. This is a meeting of the minister and the MEC. If we want it, then I tell you that we must want it from the minister. And not to really be here today to public servants, bring that attendance register if you don't. In the next meeting, we will have to take this or that step. I think this is an issue we must address with the minister. And the minister has concurrent power to the MEC. The minister is not in charge of the MEC, he has got concurrent power with them. And that is why, Honorable Hadden was saying, maybe it would be better to take up this matter on the NCOP in so far. As the provincial MECs are not attending them, they should be able to find out why the MECs are not attending and give us that report, and then we can be able to take it from there. Because in the manner we're trying to handle it, we're playing the cards before the horse, and we're expecting people who do not have the power to control the minister to control it. It's not right. And it can't.
Thank you very much, Honourable Salam, Honourable Obasa.
Not just Chairperson, I was almost speaking on what Comrade Salam has just said now. And I think Comrade Salam has put it quite clearly that we don't have oversight over the agency as Parliament and portfolio committee. We do have oversight over the minister. And matter that you must address to the minister and not ask for because with the amount of pay we are asking for minutes of the meeting of the MPC, which I don't think is correct. However, I also must draw the attention of this meeting to the fact that we did discuss this matter, and that's why we had consultation with the Nicholas Ryder as well. And we agreed in the subcommittee that that's one of the proposals we need to make on page 40, paragraph page 23, to try and address that issue instead of looking for authority where we don't have.
This is just being underlined by the committee secretary 8.2.3, and those who are in that subcommittee will be obviously even more familiar with the discussions that took place. So, think that the minister is looking here to remind myself. I mean, he is coming here on Friday, the 16th of March. I think that these issues will be raised with him as the minister directly as well. I don't want to be in the members to speak if we are now really saying the minister is going to respond to them. But I think we need to ensure that the minister is aware, and then this issue will be coming up. It is in fact already here in this report. It's right here. And the fact that it's here, we're talking about strengthening legislation and making other, requesting other points, where I think that this is very important here, and that the minister must perhaps be in a position to respond effectively to the committee. Now, I won't make any other further comments on both Hill to Love and Hill Lewis.
I'm happy for the minister to answer to the point. Can we please then note the fact that the minister should bring with him, actually prior to the 16th, the attendance register of the last meeting of the National Gambling Policy Council, so that he can then answer to that question. Thank you.
No.
Hey, that's my question.
Let's not have dialogue. I always found that highly dangerous while trying to run the committee. But, Honourable Kadega. Rather than last, and then followed by the briefing on the strategic plan of the CRPC, followed by an engagement with Mr. Ross. I wanted that engagement actually to take place in the afternoon. At 2 o'clock, that's what I said, because we still, I still had to engage him. And then the, so we're just swapping that. And the briefing of the strategic plan of the NCR will be that day as well. Now, I think that if you're looking at the media, as I know we all are, not that I trust everything I am reading in the media, but nevertheless, when you hear something on radio and people expressing certain concerns, it's out of the horse's mouth, as it were. And the NCR is something that we do need to bring back here. Unless there is any objection to a member of the committee about bringing back the NCR here, the National Credit Regulator. I don't see an objection. It moves ahead. Who is Mr. Ross Cott? I thought it was Robin Cost. Just leave this alone. This is to do with last year or the year before 2009, Mr. Elvis, Honorable Elvis. Then the first came up as part of ITAC and the new industries, etc. Is that correct?
Actually, it's actually 2010. They arose from the air show in Cape Town.
Now, obviously, it wasn't to admire the air show per se, but rather to take serious cognizance of what was being done in terms of industrialization, jobs, and apprenticeships, etc. And he, coming back, because they manufacture these planes, helicopters, and the like, and thus can save the country a lot of foreign exchange, apart from creating jobs. So we said we would give them this opening for half an hour to share this with us. And I think it's important we do this before we have to put it in the archive. So I would like, I did request if we could have something on the Wednesday or the Thursday being the holiday, but the whip assured me that that would be demanding too much from committee members, and so I have. We're finishing on the 20th. But we will make available to committee members a draft for you to take back in constituency of the committee's proposed strategic plan. Just a raw draft prepared by Scott, and please come back ready to input. And of course, I am now closing, going to close. I'd like to thank all the stakeholders for coming. I'd like to thank NTI. I'd like to thank our advocates here, Advocate Vandermeer. All the folks here, our own committee members, for staying the course. Thank you very much.
On another committee that I've got very worried on an oversight to Russia.
Thank you.